This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris and
Bruce Norris,
Dad. We're here in Florida this week, and I just remembered we needed to record a radio show, and it's been so busy. This is a nutty time of year, and I thought it would be a good idea to throw in new chapters, and I had just no idea we'd go down the rabbit trail of what we did on one in particular, so we'll talk about that. But
okay.
We're out here in the Florida boot camp, and it's interesting. You're meeting with all these people's reviewing portfolios of stuff that people hold. So have a lot of people looking to exit stuff that they purchased in like 09 and 010.
Yeah, that's what's probably the best scenario for anybody that comes to Florida is they have an equity position that came out of buying fairly at the right time, let's say in California. Mm-hmm. So they bought low after the crash, anywhere between 2009 and 2012, probably had a very similar base in cost. And then that could have easily tripled by then. And a lot of times when you were getting a good deal, it was also matched with a fair location. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense to keep, and you did. But that's the kind of inventory that has problems during a downturn of any kind in real estate. It goes vacant more often and gets filled less easy. And if it's already done its job, and i.e. gone up, then exchanging it to something that's new and got a decent location was attractive to me. And that's kind of what was the whole brainstorm of, I think other people would do the same thing.
Well, you turned me on to this model, the rentals that I bought. You know, this is my first full cycle. So having owned stuff from the 1980s and 190s. So it's not just, I have some problems with areas. I have a condition issue with a lot of repairs that need to be done. So the last one that I sold, the budget was $25,000, and that quickly doubled when I'm just like, ugh, I can't end up selling this for what I want. And it worked out.
Yeah.
So, but that might not have worked out so well if I had waited. So I did that a year ago, and then one rental sold for three brand new homes in Florida. That's a really weird journey. And one in California renting for $1,325 and then turning it into three rentals that each rent for $1,325 on new inventory in better areas. Yeah, that... It almost doesn't make sense.
Right. You don't have to be, you know, a rocket scientist to think, okay, well, I get the math of that. And also the lack of hassle of it. New homes, the Leesburg example would be the longest one that we have. So I've owned those for about 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And what I just got this morning, two very typical texts. Okay, your current tenant who's run, the lease has run its course, is signing up again for a new one. So you don't have an awful lot of vacancies. People sign up again, get to raise the rent a little bit and stay stable. So that's been a nice experience.
Some of the feedback I've gotten from people looking at the price point that we're building at, they're like, it's not the 1% rule. You know, if it rents for $1,000, they want to be buying it at $100,000 all in.
They can find that in Florida, and they're welcome to do that. It won't be in a location I would want or a tenant that I would want. And that's the difference. And that's, see, and they also, at least for me, it was really better for me to go. I ended up with a $70,000 purchase turned into a $280,000 sale in Moreno Valley. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it's a head scratcher on both ends. It's not supposed to be $70,000, but that area really doesn't deserve a 280 price either. And so that's where it was when I sold them. But I kept in mind what my basis was. My basis was $70,000 in this new home in Florida. As a matter of fact, you know, I spread that out because I bought a couple of them. You're like, okay, I'm going to forget about that rule and think I have the inventory I want for literally the rest of my life. And that's my mindset.
Yeah, and that's there definitely is a difference. We've had a few people that have wanted to come to Florida just to watch what we go through. I mean, they get a 200-page book with everything from endangered species to specific issues that are very local to what we're building and why, to strategies that they may deploy, you know. But a lot of people are coming with equity, and we're having a very different conversation with those people versus people that are wanting to start their rental career. And they're like, I just want to put 20% down. And you're like,
Yeah, it's a, Well, of course, you know, I guess you'd be better off doing that than maybe not doing it. You have interest rates that are very favorable, but you also will be absent cash flow by and large. And if you have the expectation, okay, I'm going to buy this for 200 and it's going to be worth 250 in a year or two, that's not Florida's history.
Right. You so know? You're really, we're not talking, is it in your experience hard for California investors to take off their California hat?
Yeah, that's well, and I have experience with that. I've been in other states where I learned that lesson. And, you know, now, you know, after a few times, I understand why I'm here. Texas was a complete success for me, for instance. When we 1031 exchanged in 2005 or six, I did that with the expectation of avoiding California's damage.
And you did.
Yes. And so what happened to, I lost money on 100% of the Texas purchases that I made.
Okay.
Okay. But here's the reverse of that. So I bought them for 120, netted 110 at the sale.
Okay.
And let's say I had three of them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what I did though was only sell one California house for 300 grand to get those houses. Right. And when I sold, okay. So I sold that at the peak, a house that I paid, I think Mike Cantu actually flipped me and it was 90 grand. Mm. So all that money came from a house. When I came back with the money, I bought a house, a commercial building that we still occupy that sold for 950 or 60 grand and we bought it for 318. So that was the journey. So did I care if I lost 10% on each of those homes? No.
Well, because it protected you from the damage. What did that home that you had bought?
Oh, it went down to 50. That's right. So, you know, I was thrilled with the idea that I got out at approximate peak, got in Texas that didn't blow up in price during that time frame. And so even, I mean, a rented fine and all that. But my goal was just to let prices die here and take advantage of that, which was what I was able to do.
Yeah, I mean, just for me, I've learned how much of a buy and hold investor I like being. Flipping stresses me out, and coming here, and this is what I tell people if I talk to them on the phone, I'm here for the cash flow, and I'm here for the long term. I'm not expecting to sell these things in 3 years. Maybe I'd sell them in six, but having new inventory compared to the older stuff I have has been such a much nicer journey, especially the stuff that we're building. If you upgrade it right, you're doing it right going in. Mm-hmm. So when you do sell, it's building with retail in mind, not a rental. Because if you come into specific markets and you're looking for the low price leader, you'll find them.
Yeah.
But the finishes are also included. You know, the Formica, the carpet throughout the house. It's a very different feel from what they're building. So it's been really fun to see the strategy. And it's just, you know, this is my third time out here. I own stuff out here now for over a year. It's been interesting. So,
and ultimately it changes the velocity of how your tenants leave or stay, mm-hmm. and the ability to get a certain amount of rent. I mean, it changes who your tenant would be. I mean, you're just going to, if you have a new home that's actually looks like it wasn't built as a rental, you know, with a base of everything, then you can have a good tenant and you can have a good tenant stay.
Okay. Well, Florida's been fun. It's the slow season where we're at right now. So it's funny coming back from March, the traffic, I don't know if you noticed, but...
Oh, light.
Depending, some areas triple or quadruple in numbers because of tourists.
Okay, but that's not now. It's been pretty light.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's what was light. Funny was Amanda got on the elevator. I saw them as they just got in, Matt,
yeah.
And Amanda.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could tell that she was suffering from the humidity. And it was kind of funny. I said, oh, you're from California.
It's not a dry heat. Yeah, this is the, I don't remember having to do this in March because it was cooler, but having to roll down the windows so I could look both ways at night because the humidity is so bad. Yeah. Sunglasses just fogging up and you're like, oh, it'll go away in a second. No, it just
gets heavier.
And it's not bad. This week has been in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
It has been raining every day.
Yeah.
And when we were here in December and March, not at all. It was beautiful weather. What was funny is I was in it was 70 out. And I mean, it was a little cool, but I had swim trunks on and a t-shirt and all the locals were walking around with their parkas. I'm like, okay, it's definitely different than California. So we've got this going on this week. And then I guess our next big event is in September. It's cashing in on a boom, creating value in a tight market. So people on our mailing list will get a mailer with all these events coming up. But this is a little bit different. If you followed that event, you know, we're still in quadrant four. There's a lot been going on the market lately. You know, you just released the report earlier this year. Has much changed in how you thought this would all play out?
No. Actually, year over year, we're about 1 or 2% ahead of last year's pace. But when you get that at the end of, let's say at the end of August, when those numbers come in, then typically they're stable and then they start going down. So it'll be very interesting to see if the next phase we have any upside at all. I mean, you're talking about really low interest rates. All the things that are in place in California, we shouldn't be talking about a break-even market. We should be talking about a 20% up market.
I know.
And we're not.
Now interest rates are going down again. Are you going to write a report called I Told You So?
No, I'm just going to hug the interest rate chart when it gets to 2. You know, one thing about writing stuff, and you've helped me do all those, is you're putting it in print.
I know.
You know, like California crash. That's a bold statement when you're at a market that's booming, you know. And mm-hmm. So when you write a 2% mortgage rate on there, you know, it's just like Bruce lost it. But it's probably going to happen. Interesting comment, Sean O'Toole. I kind of emailed him in exchange a couple of 3 years ago when I said, you know what, I'm going to write a report and this is going to be the title. You think I'm completely nuts? He came back and said, I actually think you're probably right. Well, text him a couple days ago, you know, the 10-year set 1.6. He says, yeah, he says, you're probably going to see that 2%. He says, it's one prediction that I wish had not come true because it spells some bad things. So what's interesting about this, like an 800 decline today in the Dow.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, wow. It kind of grew during the day.
So we're recording this on Wednesday.
Okay, so it kind of grew, and the Fed fund, not the Fed fund rate, the 30-year reached an all-time low.
Really?
In history.
Whoa.
Okay, and we have pretty full employment.
Yeah.
Think about, okay, so this is the big problem. They're talking about now on the TV for all the different financials that Fed is going to be maybe forced to lower a half a point in September right before I Survived, or 3/4.
In one shot?
In one shot. And you're at a market. It's like, okay, well, what do you do when you actually have a recession? I mean, this is really, I think it has more to do with what's going on outside of the United States and outside of real estate, but it still can impact.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going on right now.
Yes, there is.
The trade situation with China, watching Hong Kong. Yeah, it is bizarre. And you've already got negative interest rates in some countries, so it's not...
25% of all the world's currencies in negative territory.
So banks are paying you to take out loans, or like, what's the situation going on? Like, how does that even work? What does a negative interest rate mean if you've never heard of that before?
If you buy a 10-year T-bill, let's say you bought a 10-year T-bill, 10 years from now, the Fed would say, okay, you bought a $10,000 worth of them. Here's $9,950 back.
Wow.
Congratulations. Well, what that says is that's how scary of an investment environment it is in other places. So what's going on is you get a lot of foreign dollars buying our 10-year T-bill for the crummy yield of 1.58 today.
Because it's safer than anything else on the market.
Because it's safer than they've got. They have negative. So it's a very big spread.
Wow.
Think about it that way.
So we're still in quadrant four. Do you see quadrant four is a booming market? It's going from a flat to a boom market in our education, sort of on the scale. And quadrant one is going from a peak to a flat, and the quadrant one and three are shorter time frames. There's a transition.
Yeah, you're closing in on the end of four, which is good to know, because there's certain kinds of inventory you don't want to keep, or you don't even want to try to flip. And that's part of when we do presentations. Now, if you're going to deal with California and flips, make sure you have a two solution property. Mm-hmm. Don't start specking a $4 million home in Orange County starting today.
Yeah. Because that's going to take a year and a half.
That's right. It's got about a 600 plus day time frame.
Well, and that's what Q4 is really going to look at. It's creating, it's, what was the title? It's creating value in a tight market. So we've also got some really interesting players, the iBuyers. So for the first time this month in our newsletter, I've been following every buy and sale transaction from the four iBuyers, with more entering the market. So we've talked about it. It's the CarMax model applied to real estate. And at least here in California thus far, you've got Zillow Group, you've got Open Door, OfferPad, and there's one more, Zillow, OfferPad, Open Door, and Redfin.
Okay.
So those four are competing in some markets, all four, like in the Inland Empire. And up in Sacramento, you've only got Open Door, but they are spending a lot of money. So it may eat up some of the deals. Originally, we thought that maybe they wouldn't be going after heavy rehabs. I don't know if that's the case. I've seen them do some pretty heavier rehabs, do a beautiful job on that, and then stage. And then you have some, it looks like, that are backing off a little bit while Zillow and Open Door are trying to buy up as much as they possibly can. So I don't know if investors are going to be like, I'm going to let you load up on that.
Some of our investors have flipped to them.
Oh, yeah. So investors coming out here to Florida specifically, they pit them against each other. So they have rentals in the Inland Empire, and they're like, okay, offer. And they get four offers, and they take the highest one. And they were more than happy with the price that they were given. You know, we're investors. We get the all cash and flexible, yeah. Especially when you're dealing with a 1031 exchange and you can have somebody flexible on the timing. Heck yeah.
So, yeah, that is an unusual thing.
So it's a strategy. So I've been talking a lot to realtors as well about what they have to do. So one of the things we're doing in this quadrant four, I'll be sharing some of that data. We'll talk about opportunity zones. That's a strategy that the accessory dwelling unit chapter took me a long time last year to build. I had no idea the opportunity zone chapter was going to be this intense. We're working with an attorney, with the crowdfunding lawyers, and then Amanda Hahn with Keystone CPA, and we're digging into it. Part of the problem is that the IRS and the Treasury haven't finished the regulations. So they've still been in a listening period getting feedback. But the opportunity zones themselves have been discovered. So during the research, I found out that the entirety of downtown Riverside is in an opportunity zone. So I've interviewed entrepreneurs downtown that I know are buying buildings downtown. I have interviewed people who are opening businesses downtown. I interviewed the Economic Development Agency for the city of Riverside. And there's a real sense of like, yeah, we don't know what to do with it. And I think part of it is because you have to create, you can take gains from anywhere. If you are really big into stocks and you've always wanted to get into real estate, this is an opportunity for you to take the gains from the stock market that it's been.
Talk about the timing of right, that. Wow.
You might be able to exit the gains and bring it into real estate in a tax-deferred manner. You still have to pay taxes, but this is a long-term play. This came out of the Trump tax bill of 2017, and it created this opportunity to where you can invest in an opportunity fund, and as long as those funds go into designated opportunity zones, which are typically lower-income areas, and you invest in the long-term, there are tax benefits if you hold it for 5, 7, and 10 years, and it gets better as you go along. But it's just been interesting doing all these interviews. I've even been talking to the state of California, the guy that was running the consortium of California entities involved in making it happen, left in March. No, I can't find who replaced him, and the website for California Opportunity Zones, nothing's gone on. I've heard rumors that there's not one, I don't believe this, by the way, that there's not one opportunity zone project actually in the works. But people think that you have to create some big SEC regulated right. fund. This is literally, you have to create an entity, an LLC, and register. It's a one-page form with the IRS. So an individual could do it, create a multi-member LLC, and talk to your CPA. That's one of the reasons I'm working with an attorney and a CPA.
And they're in Florida as well, these opportunity zones.
Where we're building.
Right, yeah. Where we're building.
So it's also a 1031 exchange opportunity. So if you get stuck in a 1031 exchange that's going to blow up, this might be able to save your bacon on yeah. some of that so you don't pay boot. Another interesting thing is you can hold back the equity and then only park the gain. So if you're looking to cash out what you put in California and then take the gain by itself, you can do that and split it off.
So if you have a free and clear property, you can exchange the gain into the opportunity zone and take your cash home.
Yes.
Amazing.
Right. And then the other thing that we learned, Amanda told me, is that you can take new construction as long as there's not a certificate of occupancy on the new construction, it counts. So if you're in a really tight time frame and you wanted to build something new but don't have enough time to go through the journey, you can buy something as long as it's not CO'd, you can do it. So there's a lot of opportunity that people don't know, and it's a ticking opportunity. If the government doesn't extend it, by the end of this year, if your money's not placed in an opportunity fund, you miss one of the opportunities, the 7-year opportunity.
Okay.
So anyway, we're going to cover that in great detail.
Fantastic, Aaron.
We're going to update people on accessory dwelling units, where we stand. There was an update on August 12th. Some things have changed, I heard, that are not investor-friendly, so the owner occupancy bit hasn't changed, so that's a real bummer. I think they got rid of the 5-year. It might have gone away completely, so cities will still be able to say that the units have to be owner-occupied which is just a shame. You're really taking all real estate investors and not wanting to do it because, you know, you'd have to find somebody who'd want to rent the primary and the, you know, the other home. It might be more of an opportunity for flippers who are really good at design and do a good job on placement. We have some LA investors, some Orange County investors who have good luck, but this might not work in a San Bernardino market where
certainly takes a lot of the quantity out of the market. And that's silly because that was the intention.
Right. Creating affordable housing. Rental. Absolutely not. So anyway, that's coming up September 14th. Subscribers get a heavily discounted rate. And if you're new, what you do is you pay for a subscription. We're only going to cover, you know, 4 or 5 chapters out of the 60 plus hours. This is just our opportunity to update and for people to ask questions live. And then people who attend for the first time and become a subscriber there end up, you know, having access to the 60 hours. They get the quarterly newsletters and webinars that we do and cool other events. So that's coming up September 14th in San Jose. It only comes to San Jose every other year. Okay. So if you're in the Northern California market in San Jose, San Francisco, we'd love to see you. We then have I Survive Real Estate coming up September 27th.
I'm real excited about that because it's 2 weeks after this next Fed Fund meeting.
That is perfect
irony. It is. So we'll be able to discuss either a quarter, half, or 0.75% decline of the Fed fund rate in the middle of really what's been a pretty long boom without signs of a real recession in the U.S. So it's really interesting. And what's so nice is we have very, very intelligent people on the panel.
Right. We've got Sean O'Toole. He's been on the panel almost every year. He's our reluctant sometimes reluctant. He doesn't always like to be on the panel. He's a little shy, but he also doesn't like to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I think he loves certain topics. And I mean, that's what's great is to talk about peering into the future. That's fantastic to be able to ask him the tech stuff that he's aware of and his son is up to and all that stuff. That's cool. John Byrne sent me an email. So what happens if you can borrow money on real estate at a negative rate?
That is a weird thought. Own a home and get paid to do it? That would be weird.
I think he was sort of tongue-in-cheek because he knew it was going to go down. But I thought, well, I guess I'd refi the money, collect extra cash flow on the payment from the bank, still rent it out, and then I'd have all that money to do something else with. I mean, that's just the nuttiest thing.
What are hard money rates going to look like if that happens? Yikes. Well, we have Sean O'Toole, John Burns is back. And for people who don't know John Burns, the people who get it, it's funny because they're like, how do you get John Burns? He's just been really supportive and
he has been.
Consults all over the globe, national builders, the Wall Street REITs that handle the rentals. So he's really got a very unique perspective on the builder side and what's going on in the market.
Yeah, he's one of the speakers at the Malden event. I mean, that's world class stuff.
So Doug Duncan, the chief economist of Fannie Mae, I am always surprised what he gets away with on the panel, what he gets to say, considering he works for the federal government. Just a breath of fresh air. He's a lot of fun.
He is. And it's so informative and it is so nice that he's able to say what he really thinks, you know, without restraint. It sure seems like he's been one of the people that have been able to say things.
Whenever I've been pitching a lot, I've been working on some speakers for over a year. When they're trying to find out what this event is, it is very unusual. And once they finally slow down and understand what we're doing, they're like, oh, I'm not on the panel with all other people from my industry. I'm the highlight.
Right.
And wow, what an interesting mix. It's really, really fun. But I always tell them, I'm like, this group loves data and they love candor. If you can do both, this is not a mainstream media event. Give it to us down and dirty. You can be funny.
You know what's great about it, and it's happened over time, is that the panelists often are repeat people.
Yeah.
And they've learned to feel comfortable with each other. And I think it's gotten freer. In other words, people are saying some things that they probably wouldn't have 4 years ago where they feel very comfortable now going, what about this or what about that? Kind of batted around almost. And that feels fun to me.
Well, this is a smart crowd too. So now that they have gotten to understand us and, you know, how we create this, it's been fun. And just a note, we are not going to be streaming this live this year. It's way too stressful and It always doesn't work so well. So people have a bad experience. I'm like, you know what? We'll produce it on Amazon Prime and YouTube and the radio show afterwards. So we're going to really focus all of our time and attention for the 400 people to attend live.
Good.
Up also on the panel new this year is Blockchain blockchain technology expert Mark Leswing. He was a longtime chief technology officer, and he's been on the radio show before talking about blockchain. This is the technology behind cryptocurrency, and I'm not so interested in talking about cryptocurrency as I am the blockchain technology and the real estate industries. It will disrupt. Major banks are investing in this technology, and it's a security play. And when you've got as much issues as we have going on in the market with security, even going to the Consumer Electronics Show, I was really surprised they've been pushing the innovation without pushing security. And I think that's going to have to change in the next couple of years. There's just no way around it as 5G truly enters the market. And driverless cars, you better have security, because you can't have bad foreign governments being able to shut down driverless cars because they can log into cars. It's just, we have to figure it out.
Wow.
So it's why I want to introduce this topic. It's a little advanced. I hope not too many eyes crossed, but I'm excited to at least introduce the conversation a few years ahead. Sort of fun. We've got Jim Park with the Mortgage Collaborative. He's the CEO there. So past speakers we've had from there, of course, David Kittle has been good. Gary Acosta has been on a few different times. So this is the first time we have Jim Park on the panel. And I'm working on one more. I've been really trying to get the iBuyers, but it's been really hard to land them. Number one, they've been really busy. And some of them are in semi-stealth mode, which has been a little bit frustrating. They don't want to be as open about their buy box and the model that they're implementing and all the markets they're going into. Sometimes it feels like the case of FOMO, the fear of missing out. Everybody's doing it because everybody else is doing it. And they feel like they have to. But when you look at the business models of like a Zillow that launched their mortgage company this year, and I Survived Real Estate last year, we got introduced to Dotloop. So we know that they've been trying to control the closing process with title and escrow.
Right.
So by the time, if they buy your house, you're going to enter the Zillow brand, and you will never touch another real estate brand for the entire process. That's a lot of power. And you're not making the money on the buy. You're making money on the services along the way.
All the downstream stuff.
Right. So when I talk about this, it's the first time that people fully sort of realize the model that they're doing. Now, again, none of this is recession tested. And Zillow came out this month and they lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So whether Wall Street will stick around if there's a recession and that number keeps popping up, it'll be interesting to see.
Just a thought, John Burns may have them as clients.
Oh.
It might be a good, hey, John, do you think one of your friends might want to be on the panel?
Okay. I might have to reach out because I've sort of been negotiating with four and I've landed one. But he might have a schedule conflict, so okay. We're waiting to see. Right. Finally, this has been a little bit of a long show, but October 19th, we have our Cutting Edge Financial Tactics Brunch. So this is by far the most sophisticated thing we do all year. The speaker panel, it's specifically meant for people. It's not basic. If you want basic, check out our Amazon Prime. If you're an Amazon member, you can view it for free. We talk about every year we have a 1031 exchange expert, a CPA, an attorney. We're there. We always hear that, oh, talk to your attorney. Oh, talk to your CPA. That's why at this event, we have everybody on panels so we can beat up some really advanced estate planning topics and get the honest California-specific answer to the right thing to do. So I really love this event. It's very well attended. This year, we've got Karin Hall with UDirect IRA, Dino Champagne with Asset Preservations, Inc. as the 1031 exchange expert, Matt and Amanda Hahn with Keystone CPA, and Harry Barth with Balth Calderon attorneys. So really great lineup. It's going to go fast and dirty. Every speaker has about 20 minutes, a TED style. This is an update. These are the changes that happened this year. Here are the biggest mistakes we see investors making. And then the second half of the day is beating up more sophisticated topics and taking live questions from the audience.
Right. So the panel takes the questions, and that's a fun. I have never failed to learn a lot every time we do one of these.
Sometimes it takes me a few times to hear it and I'm go, aha, now I know what you're talking about.
That's true.
Sometimes your brain isn't ready to receive it when it's ready to receive it, until it's ready to receive it. And not the entire event does end up online. We're going to ask people to ask the personal questions. We don't mind if they feel comfortable doing it, but we don't always post the more personalized questions until later. So if you don't attend the live event, it's a very low cost event. There's a discount for two people. If you sign up before September 1st, it's even more discounted. I think it's $55 for two, and it includes brunch and valet parking.
It's free, basically.
It's just to make sure we know the amount of food that we need to prepare for it. So,
okay.
And if you are a subscriber, you get to have access to, we take you to lunch afterwards. If you're in the area and you pay for that, we bring you to Maggiano's down the street on us and just get to hang out. No education involved, just networking. So okay. All those events are on the website. We'd love to see you at any four of those events that we're working on right now. And if you have questions, you can call the office. So website, office. That's all right. Great. And we hope to see you around.
All right, Aaron. Thanks a lot.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.